John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, my colleague, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. The Samarkand meeting, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was billed as the big meeting between Xi Jinping, going for his third term at the head of the Chinese Communist Party, leaving his Beijing compound for the first time in 2 years and traveling to Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan and Samarkand, meeting with Vladimir Putin, leaving Moscow to travel also. That was not all the business that was at hand. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization enters into an era where it dominates the story in Eurasia, the world island. The original founders included Central Asian states, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan. Now there are new members, I believe, including India and Iran, which changed the flavor of this conversation. It's very much about this vast world island and its prosperity into the future. Gregory, I don't want to start with the security matter, the military matter. Do you measure that at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, which you say is the most important in history, it recognized that it had become an organization that can match NATO, that with the U.S. not present, they're not looking for the U.S. to be present, they have their own fates?
Well, what we titled the report was Samarkand, a global change with Washington out in the cold, and that a subtle shift in the global balance had occurred with the SEO summit without any U.S. influence or input. And the reality is that that the SEO summit was a landmark, and it was not the most important conference in history, but it was the most important event in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's 22-year history. Finally, the SEO came of age. It made substantive advances. It defined the new Moscow-Beijing-controlled bloc of states, which is very coherent. It's not a response to NATO or doesn't mirror NATO. And we have to bear in mind that NATO itself, in any event, is now more or less a toothless tiger. It has become a political organization, whereas once it was a very, very efficient and powerful military organization. Right now, we see that the militaries within NATO are not as well coordinated as they were in the 1980s. They are not as well equipped in relative terms as in the 1980s. But then again, the adversaries they're facing, namely, well, particularly Russia, are themselves not great global military powers anymore. We're now seeing, if you like, a balance of weakness between NATO and its adversaries. And in the case of the People's Republic of China, of course, that's much stronger than it used to be during Cold War One. But so we're seeing the SEO becoming really significant because it's consolidated control to a degree over the Eurasian heartland, which includes the stands, if you like, in Central Asia. The U.S. was making huge headway with the cooperation of particularly five major and one peripheral Central Asian state, to the point where the U.S. could drive a wedge between Moscow and Beijing geographically up into Central Asia with the approval of all of those Central Asian states which wanted to escape from domination by Moscow or Beijing. Now, Moscow and Beijing, and particularly Moscow, have reasserted control over that. They have then extended that, as you say, to Iran, which became a full member of the SEO at this conference, and India. And India will host next year's SEO summit. And that pulls India away from its alliance with the West, particularly its alliance with the United States. Yes, India is still a member of the Quad, the quadrilateral treaty between India, the US, Japan, and Australia. But you could argue that Turkey, which played a key role in the SEO summit in Samarkand, is a member of NATO. And it is acting as though it were a full participant in the SEO, which it is not yet, but it acted as though it was. So we've got a de facto Warsaw Treaty bloc of countries, which includes Russia, Turkey, Iran, and the People's Republic of China, and as I say, may also grow to include Kazakhstan and possibly more. right now, the U.S. has no voice in any of this. It couldn't influence the SCO candidates. We saw India absolutely wooing the Central Asian states. And that doesn't mean that India is fully supportive of Beijing or Moscow, because it's not. But it's more likely to treat with them and accommodate them in ways which the U.S. is not happy about. And in fact, the SCO summit, which not only saw the meeting between Putin and Xi Jinping, it also saw the meeting between Xi Jinping and Narendra Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, on ways to ease their relationship and get back away from this recent confrontational zone. Now, India has been key to intimidating the People's Republic of China not to attack Taiwan, because in the recent history, if the PRC was to attack Taiwan, then India would make strategic gains into the Tibetan plateau, which is controlled currently by Beijing. Now we're seeing that the Indians are looking more for a negotiated relationship with Beijing rather than accelerating the military confrontation. So this has ramifications for the Indo-Pacific, for Taiwan, and the like. And all we see out of this process is that Washington is without real influence and input. And this really began with the manner of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in August last year. It destroyed U.S. credibility and influence in Central Asia.
Two conflicts ongoing, Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, a border dispute, and Armenia and Azerbaijan, a dispute about territory since the Soviet era. Is the SCO in a position to negotiate in some fashion a ceasefire or an armistice, because Russia has not been successful so far? We have about a minute.
Well, the Russians are attempting to use their treaty organization of former Soviet allies in that region to mediate the Armenia-Azerbaijan dispute. Really, Russia would like to contain Azerbaijan, because Azerbaijan has a land border now with Turkey and therefore can be a conduit for Central Asia to trade with Turkey and out into the Western world without going through Russia and China. So Russia's neutrality in that negotiation is regarded as pretty questionable. Also, Russia and China have differences of opinion as to how they want to handle Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan and their border dispute. And really, since the U.S. withdrawal from Central Asia, The ability of Uzbekistan to negotiate peace in that region has diminished slightly.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Great Britain. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.